buddy. Welcome to a Wednesday edition, Ye Old Bulldog Hour. Captain Russ alongside here as always until 3. CG will take over. He'll bring you a CGP to 5:15 today, and then it will be Paul and Q live and direct from the Spectrum, the very grandiose name for what is a real nice big gymnasium, if you will, on the campus of Utah State, but a tough place for any visiting team to come in. Paul and Q will have tip-off show and the pregame starting at 5:15, 6 o'clock, the Bulldogs and the Aggies of Utah State. That game is also available through the Mountain West digital offering. I'm going to say this one more time. We always urge you to stay with our broadcast, no matter what the TV opportunity might be. But in this case, when the games are produced by the schools themselves, which happens for the digital network for the Mountain West, most of those games now are available on the stadium app. And the reason that's a big deal is you can now get the stadium app on Roku, for instance, and other streaming devices. And anybody who deals with this a lot can tell you that when you stream on your PC, because you have so many other programs and things on your PC, you'll get buffering that a Roku, for instance, will not subject you to. And the reason for that is that a Roku, say, or your streamer, is a singular device. It doesn't have the pull of the email server and other programs you might have on it, so you'll get a much more clean signal. And it's something that has come up now where you're able to get to it without having to go through your PC. It also frees up your computer to go wherever you'd like, so you can check that out if you have the proper equipment. Otherwise, your PC will do at 6 o'clock tonight. But stay with Paul and Q for the entirety of the presentation beginning at 5:15. And speaking of Q, normally he would be with me right now and then with CG tomorrow. He will be with CG tomorrow, but today we're going to reverse roles because I just heard from Mark and they're still getting settled as they head to Logan. So what we'll do, because our great friends at the station, including Russ and CG, are so flexible, we'll take Christopher first for the transition, then we'll get to Q, and then CG will come up and take you to 5:15, and we'll get your emails at tdad1@att.net, TDAD, the number one, at att.net. Friday, as always, now at 3 o'clock, the old CTE hour. Christopher and myself will go over as many emails as possible in that full hour, but transition on Monday on his show and Wednesday on this show will continue. Also want to mention tonight the women 790 at 7 o'clock tonight. So that broadcast also on our sister station, The Deuce. All right, let's bring up the aforementioned Christopher Gabriel, CTE, and myself. A big, big offering for Christopher and me on Fridays. But CG, we'll take it today. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great. Fully recovered now from what was a really fantastic weekend covering the College Football National Championship. I was there for the weekend, and then, of course, did Media Day on Saturday, did my program on Monday, had just a whirlwind interviewing Rocket Ismail, Sean Alexander, Sean McDonough, Bonnie Bernstein, and UAB's coach, and Eddie Robinson, Coach of the Year, Bill Clark. Saban, I got a chest talk to Saban and Dabo Sweeney and Tua and Trevor Lawrence on Saturday. I can't recall a better 3 or 4 days in this business. Just not only the people that I got to talk to, but the way the NCAA, the College Football Playoff Committee, Tony, the way they ran this thing was first class. And I'm going to tell you this, because I know you're a Niners fan. I talked to a lot of the Bay Area writers, and, I mean, the cynicism went out the window. Every one of them said, this place, if the Niners get good, is going to be a tremendous home field advantage for them, and they're right. I've been to Death Valley at Clemson. I've been to Bryant-Denny Stadium. And while the stadium never got quite to that level, I'm going to tell you, you could feel it shaking. You could feel it shaking. My ears a couple of times, namely on the 4th and 2 when Tua Tagovailoa was tackled and he didn't make the first down. And on the final score for Clemson on that great catch in the back of the end zone, the place was totally, as the kids used to say, lit. It was great. It was a magical environment in there. I mean, it was wonderful. It was nothing at all like the Levi's Stadium that I think fans experience and media experiences for Niners games.
Well, look, CG, your points are well taken. And you and I had talked on Friday about whether the Bay Area itself was the most wise place to have this game. And I'm not so sure it'll come back in all candor. We'll see. We've seen it in Phoenix, so it's not like, or Glendale, Arizona, if you want to be technically correct. It's not like they are averse to going west, but as far as the interest level, we had questioned it on Friday, as far as the facility itself, when they decided to leave Candlestick, which was not a moment too soon, I mean,
right.
Whether you're talking Kezar when I was a kid in the 60s or Candlestick, it was not a good football facility. You know, Kezar, 90% of the seats were not within the actual field of play.
Right.
They were in the end zones for what it was built for initially. And Candlestick, we all know it should have been imploded about the time they finished building it back in 1960. But we were happy here. I mean, some people in the Bay Area lamented they had left San Francisco, which is preposterous. They're still in their market. But for us, it's the most easily accessible place. San Jose, Santa Clara, right in there. Easiest place to go. The problem with that stadium has been for the 49ers, not only they haven't played well, they have struggled with the turf, and they continue to struggle with it. The other thing is they did not put anything to protect people from the sun, and they forgot, because I lived for a time college-wise in the South Bay Area. It gets very warm in the South Bay Area. It's not like being on the peninsula. And they still have to take steps, CG, during the early part of the football season to protect the crowd from the sun beating down on them, something they really didn't have to worry about at Kezar or at Candlestick. If they can solve that, it is a state-of-the-art facility. It cost them a lot of dough, you know, almost as much as Jerry Jones' yacht, for goodness sake.
Tony, let me address two things real quick. I know we have emails to get to, but this is worthy of discussion, I think. Two things. Number one, to a man and woman, the Bay Area writers again said the 49ers should get in touch with the NCAA and find out who redid the turf and fixed the turf, because, I mean, I went down there at one point, and it was fantastic. And everyone said it was in the best shape they could remember. And I mean every single Bay Area writer. So somebody with the 49ers who runs the field, whoever is the turf person is not doing a very good job. The other thing that you said, I want to be devil's advocate with you for a moment, because I've heard the argument about the heat. You know, Tony, you look around the league, you look around college football and the National Football League, and there are plenty of places that are in the sun and hot and you know, just uncomfortable. That there's nothing unique about Levi's Stadium and about those folks on that one side of the stadium being in the sun. It's just, I mean, look at Fresno State. So I guess the question I have is, what do you think they could do? Because the only thing they could do would be something similar to what the old Texas Stadium had, which is a partial roof. You wouldn't want to cover the field, because it's the Bay Area. It's still going to be nice weather in Santa Clara. Do you think that something like that could ever happen?
Yeah, they had talked about the cantilever roof, something that would protect the fans but leave the field open to elements.
Yeah.
Also, keep in mind, when this would come up a Chicago Bear frame of mind, by the way. I'm not saying you. I'm saying fans at Soldier, because I was there on Sunday. They were not happy, oddly enough, Christopher.
I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Well, look, I already have it. I talked about it. We hadn't heard from our good friend Clovis Dave, who's an inveterate Bears fan. I was worried about his well-being. I brought it up on air. He emailed mercifully,
Tony,
to say he was just in mourning. Yeah, I know.
I'll just interject one thing. A good friend of mine in Albany, Georgia, put on Twitter, can someone in the Bay Area check on my man, Christopher Gabriel, to see if he's okay?
Well, you would be one of that handful that I was worried about. And look, I mentioned it to Cam in 88, I guess it was. I had the privilege of being there to call the old Fog Bowl, a game they never should have played, but they were under pressure to play the game between Philly and the Bears. And I mentioned to Cam yesterday, if somebody would have said I was going to have a more strange playoff game to call between Philly and Chicago in my life at Soldier Field, I would say you're out of your mind. They topped it on Sunday. For pure weird, that was just as strange a football game as I have ever been around. Not just the way it ended, Christopher, the entire ebb and flow of that thing. I'm not so sure that I could believe what I saw. And Bears fans, right now, I said it half joking, that Cody Parkey needs to call Steve Bartman and see if he has an extra room available in the hideout. because I guess if you're Bartman, you're saying, this is great. I'm not the most hated guy in Chicago anymore. We won the World Series.
Yeah, that's right.
And now they got somebody else to throw their venom on. I will say this, though. When it starts with Urlacher and Butkus coming out, as a field goal kicker, you better not miss a field goal.
Right.
At Soldier Field, particularly to hit the upright for, what, the fourth time in the year or whatever it was now?
15th or 20th, five or six.
How many times did he hit the upright?
Let me just tell you this about that upright. I'm speaking now purely as a paranoid lunatic Bears fan. The only thing that surprised me in that field goal is that it didn't hit the other upright, too.
Just so you wanted the triple
thing. Yeah, the triple thing. And, yeah. My daughter was next to me. She said, Dad, but I stopped. I had to come back on Sunday, and then I went back up to the Bay Area. My daughter, my older daughter looked at me. She goes, Daddy, you okay? And I said, Daddy needs a moment.
Well, they're happy. I said Parkey doesn't have to buy a drink in Philly the rest of his life. I do like your concept, though, that you're going to kiss it off the left upright. It's going to hit the crossbar and then carom up and hit the right upright and still fall just short. Because if I'm Parkey, I'm saying, you know what? When that ball kissed the upright and hit the crossbar, it was going to go one way or the other. It wasn't going flat down to the ground. It was either going forward or in reverse, and it managed to go forward. It could have easily gone the other way.
Yeah, it could have. It could have.
That make you feel any better?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Yes.
But look, to finish the thought about Levi Stadium, your points are well taken. A Bears fan would say, Mike Ditka would say, the problem is 49er fans are too loaded up on fine wine and cheese, and that's why the sun bothers them so much. So is that a stereotype we can get rid of, or do you still feel that it is an effete group that checks out 49er games and season ticket holders?
It's probably partly that, and it's also, I think it's driven by what, you know, by the fact that the Bay Area, people took for granted the fact that, oh, we're going to move to a beautiful stadium now. But I think people, you know, they enjoyed, to a certain extent, Candlestick. They packed Candlestick.
They enjoyed the outcome of Candlestick.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look, in fairness, Candlestick was a nicer place in October than it was in the summer, okay? And that's because the winds coming off the bay, the hawk, dies down. It didn't mean field goal kickers wouldn't tell you it was a nightmare. Well, Soldier Field has always been a nightmare place as well because
of
the winds.
Awful.
But you are right in saying that Candlestick was a much more palatable place to view a game in October and November. The winters in San Francisco, generally speaking, are nicer than the summer. Hence the term, the coldest winter I ever spent in my life was a summer in San Francisco. It's not that way in Santa Clara. And I understand what you're saying, but I do think for the fan base and maybe for the organization, for Jed York on down, they weren't quite prepared for what they were going to face. So the 49ers should have known, the organization, because Eddie D put the, you know, Marie DeBartolo Center there in Santa Clara years ago. You know this. It's right adjacent.
Yeah,
so
right.
You would think if Jed spent any time at all actually working during the time his uncle owned the team, he would have known what to expect in Santa Clara.
Do I sound bitter? No, you don't sound. Well, listen, okay. The Bears for years, I'll put a button on this for us. The Bears for years had talked about moving across the state line. They wanted to do a retractable dome. This is years ago in Gary, Indiana, and they did sort of sample polling through the newspapers, the Sun-Times and Tribune, and Bears fans overwhelmingly said, you move this team, this franchise, to Indiana, we're done. And Bears fans would have been done because there is a huge Indiana-Illinois thing there I won't get into, but the Bears finally wised up. But Soldier Field, even the new place, it's underrated as a place to watch a game. It's a lot louder than people realize. I would have preferred just, you know, figuring out a different place to build it or redoing it completely. I get the whole thing with the columns, but when I look at the way they've renovated and expanded Lambeau Field over the years, and especially seeing what they built for the Vikings, the Chicago Bears franchise, for as historic and great as it's been over the years, compared to those two places, they got a dump.
I understand. And I'm just going to say in closing here, and we'll get to an email or two if we can. Of course, we'll follow up on Friday. We'll talk to Q bottom of the hour. My deep sympathies, all kidding aside, to you, to Clovis Dave, to Cam, to you guys who are emotionally invested.
Yes.
Because it is tough to take. And it was a year where Parkey, who was making a lot of money, huge contract, $9 million guaranteed. He had a singular job to go out there, and I realize he made the kick as the timeout was called. And, yes, the other kick was tipped a bit by Hester. It was not just that kick Sunday. It was the number of times he had hit the upright during the year. And it's just a tough deal. Also, the fact they handled the Rams – so well at Soldier led people to believe Bears fans that they would be able to do the same this weekend. They'll never find out.
Yeah, you're right. There is, you know, as a born and raised Chicago, all kidding aside, there's an emotional investment that you, just fans understand this. I mean, just no different than Fresno State fans here with Fresno State. There's an emotional investment. I go back to Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus, and it was a crushing defeat. But you get older and you understand how it is, and you move on, and you wish. You wish the Eagles nothing but hatred. So,
Where you were going.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's the truth. That's right. You hope that they lose in a completely untenable way.
I hope they get destroyed.
Unless they're playing the Cowboys another week, in which case there's no way to pull.
None. The ever.
I'm sorry. There's that built-in Dallas bias.
I'm with you.
All right. I want to bring up Brad's email here because it does dovetail to yesterday, and we'll get to the rest of them as we can on Friday, and then we'll have the backlog that we can stare at over the summer, as you know.
Yeah.
But Brad, in a nutshell, is saying, look, he was all pumped up because Cam talking about a question I had posed to him. You and I have talked about it before. Fresno State, how dangerous would it be with a conference affiliation like an expanded Pac-12 to 14 or whatever? And Cam feels the same way that we do, which is, that would give you the money and the schedule, which would then mean you could go recruit top-flight talent, take it right away from SC, UCLA, etc., by saying, quite logically, come to Fresno, we're in the Pac-12 or Pac-14, whatever it is, you're on national TV, you're going to play these guys home and road, SC has to come here for in the same division every other year, your friends and family are close enough, but you're far enough away that you have some autonomy, but you can zip home anytime you want in a few hours. I think everybody feels that a Jeff Tedford could really make hay with that. But the question is, Christopher, legitimate one by Brad, as much as on paper that would work here in, say, San Diego, that's for sure. Will it ever happen, or is it a pipe dream that's wonderful in theory but never going to be there in practice?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, and I think I had Dr. Castro in studio for an extended interview. We had him in here for an hour, and we talked about this, and I didn't get a sense, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn because we've got all the audio. I didn't get a sense that there was great interest on the university's part, at least right now, to make a move into a Pac-12, ultimately a Pac-14 conference. There's obviously a lot of extenuating circumstances in play, but I would say this also to Brad's thought. A couple of things. Number one, I think it would be great. I think eventually, Fresno State, just by the nature of being in the Pac-12, those athletes, that level of athlete and that level of student, I think they'd have to raise their game academically as well. They're a good university, but listen, they're not at the Fresno State academically is. I mean, we're not breaking news here. They're not at the level of Stanford and Cal or USC or UCLA. They're certainly at the level of Washington State, Oregon State, and the Arizona schools. But I think they'd have to raise their game across the board, and they could do that. There's a balancing act they'd have to deal with, and that is, stricter academic requirements. The Pac-12 wants schools that are going to be at a certain level. But Tony, here's the other thing to Brad's question. Arizona, I remember, and so do you, when Arizona and Arizona State came in. How many Pac-12, Pac-10, Pac-12, excuse me, titles? How many have they won? Since coming in.
That is a very fair point. You're right. It's been what they thought was going to be. Let's be straight about this. When this came around, the bend in the 70s, we hadn't had any expansion from the old Pac-8 that I grew up with. The thought was, oh, no, you're taking two schools, one particularly Arizona State, always a party school, right, that they were going to be able to draw all the SoCal athletes and they were going to dominate because they wouldn't have to worry about academics. They have been competitive, but they have not been by any means at the top of... I mean, you can make the argument that Utah has become a much greater danger.
Yes, agreed.
Than the Arizona schools have. Which says, okay, it begs the question, NCG.
Yeah.
I do believe that the schools in California, the four, Cal, Stanford, SC, UCLA, are very concerned or would be very concerned about Fresno State and San Diego State in an expanded Pac-12 because that is getting into their areas. They want to come here and take the top-level athlete.
Yep.
They do not want the Fresno States of the world to go in and take a blue chipper from them because the kid says, I want to get a little bit away from home. Not far enough away that I can't get there on a bye week or I can't drive home on a Sunday night or whatever. I think they are concerned about that. And Cam brought up the point, and I think it's very fair. He said, why would they want to cooperate? Even if there's an off chance, why would they even want to open up Pandora's box in that regard?
Well, Cam,
and I probably would feel the same way if I were them.
I agree with Cam. And I think the fulcrum here is this. You have USC, UCLA, Stanford, Cal, as you said. I think on the one hand, Fresno State says to them, well, listen, you're all established. SC and UCLA, you're in Los Angeles. You have a huge hotbed of talent in Southern California. You have these great all-sports histories, certainly in football with SC. UCLA is no slouch in their history. Stanford and Cal have had their great years. Hey, we're just little Fresno State. If you're so good, what are you worried about? And that to me, is where it sits. Because Fresno State's coming at this, obviously, with a very different agenda than the other four schools have. And they don't, yeah, you're right. They, and so is Cam. They don't want to have anybody jump into a piece of the pie, hence their lack of interest to ever come here for a game. But I think if the Pac-12, Larry Scott, for whatever it's worth, not my favorite commissioner, but if he were to step in and other heavyweights in the conference were to step in, I think you'd have to get folks in. I think you'd get a lot of support, Tony, from the Washington schools, from the Oregon schools, and from the Arizona schools, and certainly Utah and Colorado, because they understand that with Fresno State and San Diego State, they would be negating some of the talent that would go to the other four schools, in particular SC and UCLA. And I think, on balance, for those other 4, 6, 8 schools, whatever, they would welcome that. They would appreciate that. I think when you're the big kid on the block, you should be secure enough to say, hey, you know what? It's the benefits outweigh the negatives. We should do this. Do I ever think it's going to happen? My lean is no.
Which does beg the other question, and it's the last thing we'll get to today, and then we'll get to everything, including more of this on Friday, again, CTE Hour, which, again, stands for Christopher Tony Email Hour. That's my story, and I'm sticking
to it.
But, again, you always have to have your head examined if you're going to listen to that hour. How's that for a
promo? That's perfect.
You like that?
That's outstanding.
Yeah. That's probably too true, right?
Yes.
Let's talk about me. You, it's a whole different story.
I don't know.
You have credibility. Me,
Very little.
You always need a brain scan. My wife would tell you that. But Since it doesn't specify a conference, Brad's email, it's a Power 5 affiliation. So is the cachet of the Big 12 their desire, and it came up, obviously, in the pork belly trading that we saw a few years ago that has settled down now, right? When we didn't never lost a Boise State or a San Diego State there or to the now defunct football conference of the Big East. But a lot of discussions that time, CG. Is it just for a Fresno State to be a national player? Is it about being in a expanded Pac-12? Would it work in the Big 12, or would the athletes here not see the benefit of home and home with schools like Baylor, et cetera, as opposed to the benefit of being home and home with the schools in their area?
Well,
Is it just about an expanded Pac-12, or does it work?
Well, I think
to go to a Big 12.
Yeah, I don't think it should be about just a Pac-12, because look at the wrestling program at Troy Steiner. What conference did they join? The one that was obvious, the Big 12. They're going to be going out to the, you know, they've already made trips out to the Midwest, to the Northern Plain states. They're going to go to North Dakota State. They've been to, I think, Oklahoma State. They've been out to Illinois or to Minnesota. You want to be in the California area. You want to be with SC and UCLA and certainly Oregon and Washington. But I don't know. It's not a bad thing to say, you know, you're playing home and home, potentially home and home with Oklahoma or with a Texas or with an Oklahoma State or a Kansas State. I don't think that's a bad thing. I do think travel would not be cost prohibitive. I mean, the home and home, or I should say, you know, going on a road trip to Morgantown, West Virginia. You're not going to ever have any kind of rivalry with them. But Fresno State, listen, when TCU went into the Big 12, they didn't have any better football history than Fresno State did. And just by the nature of being in that conference, Tony, the level of talent there went up because of what you said earlier, that you're playing these schools, so you're going to get that talent. And other schools in Texas, well, Texas didn't want anybody else in Texas in that yep. coming into the conference, but they did. And I think if they could get to a Power 5 conference and suddenly a Power 6, that would be great. And how might it change, Tony, when the bowl game in Las Vegas with the Taj Mahal they're building there, how might that change the thinking of everybody on the West Coast as well? There's certainly going to be downline considerations, even just having UNLV there. You know, what's UNLV going to be doing going forward? Will they still want to stay in the Mountain West? Because they certainly, having won a national championship in basketball, I mean, they're certainly going to be looking at some options. At least I would think they would.
And that's a fair comment. And as we wrap this up, CG, it'll be a great show, of course, coming up. I'll talk to you in just a moment here after the break. Our buddy Chris, Leda San Bruno up in Seattle, had said, you know, geographically, it doesn't make any sense for the Pac-12. Chris, we agree. That's why we're saying it wouldn't happen. And with the Big 12, you're right, they would probably consider Houston or SMU because, yeah. since you brought it up, CG, to put a bow on it, Pat Hill had made the comment, the only true winner so far in all this dicing and slicing that we saw over those years, Utah and TCU, because they came from Group of Five, former conference mates, both of Fresno State,
yep.
to the Power Five. And what you say about TCU is so true. What was their advantage? Because Baylor didn't want him in there because Baylor didn't want another private institution there. Texas didn't want him there because they didn't want a school that's in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex right there. Politics, university presidents got him there because of geography. The same geography, Chris, that you're saying would damn Fresno State, Christopher, the geography is what bailed out TCU.
Yes.
And it may be that there are folks in Austin that are very much still upset that they did allow those guys in the gate. And that is probably the reason that the Pac-12 won't get near it. I don't know what the Big 12 will do long term, but I will say this. You bring up UNLV, the one point of differentiation. Jeff Tedford has put Fresno State front and center with victories, meaningful victories. That's the one thing I yep. think that Fresno State can hang its hat on. If they had the chance, they've got the captain at the helm that could bring them to national prominence.
Tony, I don't
think they'll get the chance, but I don't think there's any debate that Teddy would get it done if you gave him that schedule and that money. Fresno State becomes a major national player.
I agree. One quick add-on to your point. I completely agree. I'll say this. I think if Dr. Castro, if Joseph Castro and Terry Toomey decided one night, you know, over a cup of coffee, we want to get to the Pac-12, I think those two would get it done. I absolutely believe that.
Well, I hope they have the opportunity. It won't happen in my lifetime, but maybe, which, you know, could end tonight for all we know. But just
that's,
maybe.
That's cryptic. My goodness. What a great lead into Coach Q in a moment.
Yeah. Wow. That's right. I've said this before.
Of course. Yeah.
There's no guarantee. I'm just saying odds are good. I'm fossil fuel before Fresno State is in an expanded Pac-12.
We're all day to day.
The old Charlie Steiner line, right? When they talk about somebody was day to day, and he said, "Aren't we all?
Aren't we all?"
And I called him up and I said, "Next time you say somebody's questionable, can you say, 'Aren't we all?'" And he said, "Speak for yourself." And that was the end of the conversation. Yeah. And last I checked, he took off to L.A. and he's living the great life
there
as one
go.
Of the Dodger announcers and one of the truly nice
people. He's a great guy. Yeah,
planet. He is really, really a good guy. CG, appreciate it, my friend. Have a great show, and I will look forward to Friday.
Thank you, sir.
All right, guys, take a break. Come back with Q 150,000 watt 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. Just about 2:37 here until 3. CG will take over, bring you to 5:15. And at that point, it'll be Paul and Q, the tip-off show, and then the pregame will follow at 5:30. And the tip from Spectrum, the Spectrum that is very, very difficult for road teams to deal with in Logan, Utah, will be the site of Fresno State and Utah State. And to talk about that a little bit later than normal on a Tuesday, or a Tuesday, a little bit later than normal on a Wednesday. But all I was just thinking about the games that were played last night in the league. But also, still very much in front of the game, our good friend and color analyst, Mark Hugh Jones. Hugh, how you doing?
Well, Tony, I'm in here. A lot of snow, a few mountains, but I'm doing well, and I'm glad. Thank you for making that last-second adjustment. It's like a double-clutch shot that you used to make out by the three-point line. You just had to adjust a little bit to still get it to happen.
Yeah, that's how it might have been long ago and far away. Now I would have looked like LeVar Ball if you saw that that display where, what was it, seven times they had to feed him the ball? Never mind making the shot. I don't think he kissed iron any of the first six times. He was lucky they hit the floor the other night. I don't know. Well, why would you even want LeVar Ball shooting the ball? Seriously.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, I started to talk about Tuesday because the first thing I wanted to bring up with you, we used to kid around about the wacky whack when Fresno State was in that conference. That was mainly a reference to football. What happened in this league, basketball-wise, the Mountain West, the last 7 days, is like the old days of the wacky whack in football, just in basketball. You, to me, how in the world can you go to the Pit and win and then lose to UNLV a few days later? What is going on in this conference right now?
Well, it's that crazy time of year. And like you said, it gets wacky. It's no longer the whack, but it is it's a wacky situation. You got teams that have really spent a lot of time scouting, recruiting, scouting and putting together teams that can beat teams. But I wonder, in the Nevada case, if they're starting to face just some issues with all that talent on the team and Eric Musselman's coaching style. So I'm just curious to find out what's really going on there. But that was wacky. And, you know, sometimes, Tony, it's better to lose early in the year. Earlier, get that out of the way so that when you get into conference play, conference tournament play, or NC2A tournament for Nevada, that your players know they can lose.
Well, and that's fair. Now, look, and look, we talk about the home field advantage when, I was just talking to Paul about it on Monday, when New Mexico shows up at the Pit, I don't care if it's Wise Pies or Dream Style Arena, whatever they're calling it at any given point. When they pull up to their home facility, you know you're going to be in for a tough one. It is very unusual, however, that you can take a team that we believe out here in the West has a chance to make it Elite Eight, maybe even Final Four, and who knows, once you get there, we saw with Butler, right, you can be one shot away from winning the whole thing. That you can blow a team out 85-58 and then turn around and lose to UNLV, does that tell you that it's that well-balanced in this conference below Nevada, and Nevada is obviously vulnerable on a given night, or does it tell you that New Mexico spent it all emotionally and forgot to show up against UNLV? How do you view this?
You know, that's an interesting, you know, view of it, Tony, because we know UNLV's got some talent. You know, it's just can that guy get those guys to play like they need to play? And there's probably some letdown to it. You never know how Eagles play into things. And in January, sometimes you're figuring out, especially when you're adding in players that have had to sit out half the year, you're trying to figure out your team, and New Mexico's certainly in that situation.
Yeah, and that's fair. And look, you're back at home again, and maybe they would have been better off being on the road, Q. Maybe they just were looking at what happened Saturday and said, okay, we win 85-58 against the best team far and away in the conference. Therefore, UNLV comes in here, was lucky to beat Colorado State, as you know, before the Rams came here. The Rams had a game they probably should have won at the Thomas and Mack. Maybe you do take it for granted, and you know this from your days coaching. That's the thing you worry about the most, isn't it? Your team not emotionally ready. And that appears, Q, to not be an issue with Fresno State. Am I right in saying that Hutt and this staff have had this team, even with the Utah Valley game, emotionally ready to play each and every time this year?
Yeah, I mean, and Utah Valley is a really good team, so that's nothing to hold your head down about. You know, we talked about that before. And with social media and all the things out there that can distract players, it is very difficult to gauge sometimes how that may be playing to keeping guys focused. And you're right. I think that this staff has done a very good job, along with some senior leadership from Sam Bittner and Deshaun Taylor, they want to go to the NC2A tournament. They want to go to it really badly. So they're focused on team first, team last. They've done a really good job of that. And I think that that's a good sign for keeping guys focused, is that they want to, they know that they can get there by playing well together. If they get distracted, they're barbecue chicken.
Now, we had talked going in to the conference about how big this week would be. You know that the 5 o'clock game on Saturday against Nevada is huge for this team. It's a game that will be on ESPNU. It probably would have been on ESPN2 except for the Nevada loss last Saturday night in Albuquerque. But, Q, first things first, this Utah State team, as we've been talking throughout the week, they have four losses, all on the road, all at quality competition. You know, at Arizona State, at Houston, is a very good team. Also lost at BYU and lost at Nevada to start conference. But they are 7-0 at the Spectrum. You know how difficult this place is. We know the Bulldogs flat gave one away last year there. Deshaun Taylor is still kicking himself about it. How tough is this going to be tonight? And are you pretty well certain that there's no thought about Saturday yet for this team?
Well, I think that I'm really certain that there's no thought about it. They've got Coach Felton, who was assistant coach at Utah State last year,
right.
Did a great job up there and is doing a great job here in Fresno. They're going back into his territory. The players know it. Deshaun Taylor put it on himself that he blew the game last year and he owes one to up here. The players have a great deal of respect for what the Spectrum is like. You've got four, Hudson, Brown, Felton, all those guys were in this conference, and they all know what it's like to come up here and play. So there's a fixed focus going into tonight's game. I don't think they have to worry about overlooking it. This is a big week for Fresno State basketball, and this is the right way to start it off. You could come in here and you try to knock off Utah State and make that game Saturday super big, super, super big, where everybody's showing up.
Yeah, and we hope that is the case. Obviously, people would have loved to have seen Nevada still undefeated. But you know what? In pure pragmatism, any loss by Nevada, if you were to beat them now, enhances your chance of somehow winning this regular season, right? And that's something, Q, that a lot of people probably conceded to Nevada going in. If you can get through this week undefeated, you can actually put Nevada two games back of you in the loss column, and you'd have at least initially the tie break with the game still remaining at Lawler. It would be that big if you can get through tonight and Saturday with W's. How confident are you the Bulldogs can back them up Wednesday and Saturday?
Well, it's a tough order. They've got to be, first of all, everybody's got to be healthy. You know,
right.
Braxton's got to be feeling good. Deshaun's got to be feeling good. They've got to shoot well, and they also have to defend and rebound well. The little things that Sam Bittner's been doing has been so outstanding. He's been playing at a high level of doing the little things on the floor. It takes a lot of focus to do the boring, the physically tough things night in, night out, and do it every play. But Bittner's been doing that, and they're going to need big games from him, along with some of his offense. If he can bring some of that offense with him, they've got a chance. But it's a tall order. I mean, they're undersized, they're undermanned. They know what they are, but they're a rugged, tough team, and they're playing really, really good team basketball. So, you know, they could win both, they could lose both, they could split. But it all will come down to how well they play as a team on the rebounding end. Sometimes your shooting's not there. They haven't played very many tough, you know, road games in a hostile environment. So this tonight will be a big test for them. I'm interested to see how they respond to it. I'm interested to see what Deshaun Taylor does out there today. They're playing with some altitude. How do they handle that for some of the new guys
right.
out there? So we're going to find out a whole lot in a couple hours.
You bring up Deshaun, and he has, I'm not saying struggled to get back into the mode of playing again, but Q, you know this. When you're out as long as he was out and your roles sort of change on the team itself, then you come back in. Huggins has been down with the flu. I hope he's back to full health. It is difficult to get your legs back to where you were as a team, knowing your roles, knowing who to go to, when, and the comfort zone. And I thought, even though that game was an arm's length game, is like how I like to refer to it over the weekend, you know, they got the big lead, and then in the second half, you had Colorado State start to close up a bit, and they actually started to make that push late. And the one Taylor three that put it back, I think, to 13, really sealed the game. And I thought that was big, not just to make sure it didn't get away from you because of Carvacho and those guys down low, but I thought for Deshaun it was kind of the signal, hey, I'm back. Did you get that sense that that shot is maybe a carryover to Deshaun back to where he wants to be?
Yeah, I thought, you know, that was a big shot, gutsy shot he took. We're used to him doing that. But he hadn't been making a bunch of shots lately. And, you know, like you said, trying to get back into his rhythm. And for him to hit that shot, I felt similar to what you're feeling, that that was a big piece of them winning the game. And if he can find his rhythm within this offense, on this team, and take good rhythm shots, and he starts to make them, it's like a jab. It's like arm's length, what you're talking about. You want to be jabbing the other guy to death in the basketball sense to make them take chances and play a style that, they don't play well, make them uncomfortable, and then you're very comfortable. Fresno State did an awesome job of that against Colorado State. And tonight's going to be a little different. They're going to have to probably every possession, guys have got to be focused. You need Nate Grimes to come in and know every assignment, play
right.
Smart, no dumb fouls, no goofy antics on the floor, just business, all business. That's what you want tonight.
And what about Huggins? How much, Q, you've been there, of course, up close and personal with these games. How much has it been illness for him? Because he hasn't particularly been the guy that we saw, say, at the Legacy in Fullerton.
Well, you know, I know he was ill, so I know that much. You know, he's been getting keyed on. He's not getting the same looks.
Right.
You know, people are dedicating a really good defender on him, and as teams learn how to defend Fresno State, it's going to be an adjustment for him. So do you put him in pick-and-roll situations, or do you put him in isolation things? Sometimes it looks like he's more comfortable if he gets it on a swing-around where somebody's got to close out at him, then he can attack better. In the pick and roll, he doesn't look as comfortable. These are things you figure out about your players as teams figure you out, and you have to make adjustments. They got to go to the next alternative move. So Braxton is finding that out as he goes along at the Mountain West level. He just played his first Mountain West game ever the other night, and so I think he's adjusting as well. And he's going to have to figure out where he gets his shots, when he gets his shots, run his lane. The easy money with this team is that they've committed. When they commit to running, they get easy transition points. Braxton Huggins and Deshaun Taylor could score a ton of them. They're allowed to do it. You know, with Rodney Terry, they would have to hold it back and run the offense, and it's a mental adjustment for them to get out and run and be tired and believe, if I run, I got a chance to get an easy 2 points. You have to convince players of that when they've been conditioned not to do that for so long.
And, Q, it's a great point. You know, I look at what's going on with the T-Wolves, with Minnesota right now. With Saunders taking over, the whole league has to readjust to the fact that the Grindem style is gone. So it'll take a while. Saunders is going to move them up-tempo, which means the whole league now has to change its scouting. When you get in the league, normally there's familiarity. But is the league still learning how to play Fresno State, or have there been enough games being played now that, for instance, we know Nevada's more than happy to run with Hutt and the Bulldogs. We know that. For Utah State, do they have enough of a book right now to say, we need to slow this down? This Fresno State team is not going to give us the chance to play walk-up ball like they did in years gone by. They are going to come out, and they are going to run. So is the league now starting to adjust to Fresno State at all?
Well, we'll find out. I'm sure that, you know, you got a bunch of new coaches, so the league has changed.
Yes.
To your point, like it's like a Flip Saunders son type situation. You don't know exactly what they're going to do when you do certain things to them because, you know, no one else has done it to them all year. You'll be the first one to do it, you know, put certain type of pressure, run certain type of traps or whatever against this team. And so there are most of the coaches have got to figure it out. Is who can make adjustments on the fly and figure out how to win as quick as possible. And we got a coach at Fresno State and Hutton that knows how to do that. And that's what makes it, that's in my opinion, that's what has made this season a fun season to be around, and the tempo and the kids are having a good time because he's been able to make adjustments that make sense.
And you're right in saying that, you know, it's a couple of games in now, so tonight may be the first time this entirety of this week, this brace of games, where we see what teams do as they have enough game tape on Fresno State now to decide how to play them. I know this. If the Bulldogs make the threes the way they did the other day and make their throws, they're going to be just fine. And, Q, as I let you go, last 30 seconds, what does your gut tell you about this? Is this a night the Bulldogs get out of Logan with a W?
I'm like you said earlier, Tony. I don't know how the style is going to be played. Now, the second time around in conference, because you can look at film and you can say, here's what they're going to do, and this is what we're going to do, and you run against your scout team. But until right. you see those Bulldogs coming at you, you really don't know how your guys are going to respond. So there's a lot of unknowns tonight. Just look for a bunch of excitement. That's the one thing I can guarantee you.
Well, I look forward to it. Hope you guys have a great broadcast, Q. Certainly talk to you later in the week. Take care, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Thanks for adjusting again, Tony. Appreciate it.
Hey, you guys have a safe night, Q. We'll see you. Take care.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, guys. Mark Q. Jones, live and direct from Logan. We'll take a break, wrap it up, send you off to CG on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.